Representing East Oakland, man.
Welcome, welcome back, guys. Season 3 of the Hawk Vision Podcast. I am your host, Chuck Hawkins, here to help you shorten the learning curve on your way to greatness. Over 100 interviews of successful entrepreneurs and thought leaders have graced this show so that we can help you understand what the process of chasing and achieving greatness looks like. Make sure you like, share, subscribe across all your social media platforms, especially here at YouTube. More importantly, share this podcast with other visionaries just like you. All right. We have an absolute heavyweight joining the show this week, guys. Listen, this one is for my visionaries. From proven methods that this phenomenal CEO teaches, her clients have secured over $75 million in venture capital funding. She's been seen in USA Today, featured in TechCrunch. She's one of the sharpest minds in the DE&I tech spaces. And when she sits on various boards, those boards thrive. She's partnered with some of the most recognized companies to help secure mutually beneficial, long-lasting career paths for Black and Brown innovators of color. She's a speaker, a mentor, CEO. Please welcome the absolutely amazing business strategist, Ms. Brooke Daniels. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chuck. I'm excited to be here today.
Absolutely. Listen, when the forces that be put us on the radar and I started doing the research, I was like, okay. So I'm excited about this one. You know, it's good when I talk in my high voice. So I definitely want to thank you for carving out some of your time and want to respect it. We got to jump right in. And I got to ask you so that my listeners know if they can trust you or not. Coffee or tea?
Trick question. I used to be coffee up until last year in December. And I'll talk a little bit more, but on my wellness journey and meditation journey, I actually gave up caffeine. So for the most part, I am tea. I've gone from a triple latte girl at Starbucks to tea in the last like 8 months.
All right, guys. Well, this interview is over. We cannot. No, I'm playing. You know, it's funny. I there's people that are so strong in their stance on both sides. I tried to give up coffee. It was the worst 30 minutes of my life. Like, I couldn't do it. What got you into entrepreneurship?
My husband and I, believe it or not, have been entrepreneurs our entire life. I don't know. I've always, even when I was in college and so forth, have always been really motivated to try new things. I didn't love always working in the system and always felt like there's a better way to do it. But my husband and I had our first business together, which was a food truck in our 20s that we enjoyed doing. We had it for 5 years. It was global street food called Street Spice, but that was the first time we kind of brought together my nice business acumen side with my husband being a chef.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. So the bug's been in you forever. There's this thought process that, and I don't know if I agree with it, but I saw somewhere where somebody said $100 as an entrepreneur is worth $1,000 as an employee. I like the $1,000, but how did it feel to get the first, you know, positive cash flow coming in from entrepreneurship and those efforts?
It felt great. It felt great. My husband has been full-time on our businesses since then. So he's continued to really thrive. And we've got, I'll talk a little bit later about some of the other things that we're doing now, but it felt great. There's nothing like seeing something that you create or you think is valuable, being perceived as valuable by your customer and client and seeing the benefits they get out of it. There's just nothing more rewarding than being able to build that from the ground up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now we've, you know, fast forward, because obviously there are some businesses in between there, some 9-to-5s in between there as well. And now we are business strategists. And how did we get to define ourselves as such when everybody wants to be a business coach these days?
Absolutely. You know, I'll say first off that the work I'm doing now as a business strategist is purpose-driven work. Like, I really feel like this is what I'm being called to do, is to take all of this knowledge, all of these experiences that I've had from entrepreneurship, that I've had through working at top corporate companies, and now distill that down for the everyday entrepreneur. There's never been more people who are entering the space now who want to be entrepreneurs, who are stepping out of corporate. And if I can give them knowledge based on my experiences and help accelerate their growth, wow, that is really the magic of what I feel like I'm doing here. But really, again, it's based on my own experiences. I grew up in tech startups most of my career. joined one company in particular called Intapp very early in my career, early in their journey as well, and stayed with that company, launched their first adoption consulting program, scaled that into an entire customer success org. I went back out into sales, helped launch some new markets. And then after I got my MBA, I was a practice group lead. So did M&A, responsible for 25 million book of business, working with our sales leaders, ROI, and kind of seeing that magic come together.
Yes.
Well, alongside that, my husband and I are doing our businesses as well. So we have the food truck. We open a couple of businesses focused on e-commerce. And you would be amazed at how the business principles that the largest companies are using, even though they may look different, are exactly the same at their foundation for core business too. You have to differentiate. You have to know your market. You have to speak to your customer, right? You have to understand how much your customer is willing to pay for the value you provide. And so it was interesting watching how much overlap there was from what I was building in a tech startup to what me and my husband were building as small business owners.
Wow. Wow. I love it. So let me ask you, because obviously if you're doing practice leader group, you know, I spent several years as a corporate recruiter, so I know salaries. So if you were on the practice group, practice leader, you were doing well, right? You were doing well. What is it that burns inside, if anything, that, you know, you just didn't settle, right? I think a lot of people will get to a certain point in their careers, the money's good, and they would rather settle for the money. Everything's on autopilot in the office, right? You kind of, you know what you're doing. You go in there, having meetings, you leave. But you had something that made you and your husband keep going. What is that? Because I think a lot of people ignore that. Can you explain that for me?
Absolutely. I think that is really kind of that core essence of what burns within us, and whether you're in a place with a mindset of focusing on, I know the type of life that I want to live. I know what that looks like. It's a combination of time. Usually it's a combination of freedom. It's a combination of money and wealth, and really believing in your ability to create that. Usually that does not look like working a traditional 9-to-5, right? I've not met many people whose dream life looks like working a 9-to-5.
Yes.
And it's just whether you believe in yourself and your dreams big enough, I think, to pursue that and actually say, I actually have the power to create. And I know that no matter what comes in front of me, I will be able to overcome those challenges. If you're spiritual, you know, I believe I have faith. I meditate. There's all these things. I'm big on manifestation that I put into how we create. But I think it starts there. It's like, am I dissatisfied enough with the status quo to really believe I can have the life that I want? And if you can, then that's when I think you know you're kind of on that path to entrepreneurship.
Yeah. I was going to do this later on in the conversation, but this kind of leads perfectly to it. I saw a quote not too long ago. Steve Harvey was saying that the two most important books that he recommends are The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale. Love that book. And The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz, which is one of my absolute favorites. And I recommend that to everyone that asks me about books. And the two questions that I had from that, which you just alluded to, is how important is it to do that mindset work to strengthen the belief, right? Because we can believe we're good, but it's another thing to go start a business and now have people pay for it, prove it.
The mindset work is critical. People underestimate how much success is attached to mindset. Yeah. We think it's all effort, right? And actions and execution, but mindset is a huge part of it. That's actually step one in my 7-step system that I go through that I work with entrepreneurs on. It's called the Ready, Aim, Launch system. And step one is game time mindset.
Love it. I love it.
You have to start there.
So that is one of the biggest battles I think we will ever fight, is the, you know, the 6 inches of space between our two ears, because we have this lifetime of accumulation of events that create where we are right now, right? Our best decisions have created where we are right now. And then we have to start this new self-talk process of, okay, you've gotten here. You haven't died yet, right? Nothing's killed you. It's made you stronger, but now we have to make you wealthier. What does that process look like as it relates to the Ready, Aim, Launch system that you provide?
That's a great question. I think part of it first is meeting people where they are on that journey. Because to your point, everyone's experience has been different, right? We have different traumas, different, just, I guess I'll go with experiences that impact where our mindset is today. And I think the first step is just acknowledging where you are on that and starting to do some work to understand yourself and where you are on that journey and how we can improve it.
Yes.
For me, it's about also trying to find balance. I hate this narrative that as an entrepreneur, we have to work 20 hours a day or we're not working hard enough. Don't get me wrong. There are definitely long days, right?
Yes.
I know you have long days too sometimes, Chuck. They're definitely irregular schedules, but that doesn't mean we have to be completely burned out, stressed out, high anxiety. Because I challenge when we're in that state, how in the world can you be the best version of yourself as a CEO, as an entrepreneur, when you're living in this state of stress, right? You're not even healthy. Right. So there's no way you're going to be able to be the best version of you to then have this amazing business and be successful. And so if we start there with mindset, tactics to really alleviate stress, to kind of get, I'm big on meditation. I'm actually getting certified right now to be a meditation coach under the Chopra brand. I'm bringing that to my clients too.
Deepak, okay.
Find that stillness and really get focused.
Yeah.
Right. That's when I find that entrepreneurs are in a mindset to be prepared for whatever challenge comes their way and really continue to stay focused on those goals. It really does start with kind of grounding yourself. And that's what I use meditation to do that. There's a lot of things you could do, but for me, meditation has been huge.
I'm a huge list writer. I tried to meditate and all I did was quietly come up with 9 things I could have been doing while I was meditating and 9 reasons why.
I'm going to get you to a class, Chuck.
Oh my God.
Come into one of my classes.
Listen, I am not. Quieting my mind is just not one of the things that I've been able to do so far. It's like the Nicolas Cage still in the Mustang, right? Like it's just the one thing that never works for me. I have to write it out. But I'm more than willing to learn to meditate. It just seems so peaceful. Like everybody that I know that does it is like, got to get to it. I'm like, how? Like, show me where to go in there. Yeah, like show me where to go in there. Find the switch and turn it off and I'll be good. I'll be good. So talk to me. 7 steps. Ready, aim, launch. We have mindset. I need 3 more of the steps because we don't want to give away the farm, right? I need 3 more that are your favorites in this process.
Ooh, I have 4 favorites. Let me see if I can, because they're all so important. So I'm going to give you 3, and if I have time, I'll give you the 4th.
Okay, let's do it.
It's the second step, but it's an important step, which is around competitive and market analysis. Mm. And it sounds so scary to people. And I know a lot of people feel like, well, if I'm creating whatever it is I'm creating, then it's different and it's unique, right? But you got to understand what's already happening in the market. Yeah. And I say that to say, not just to know who your competitors are, but understand how those competitors are maybe leaving gaps in the market that you can solve for. So not only do I know who my top competitors are, I understand how they speak to their client, what value they are articulating that they provide. And I can use that to then guide how I think about solving for my business. It's just a lot of people think, oh, I've got to know my competitors. I got to know the market and I just move on. But it helps you really focus when you're starting out as an entrepreneur. The other thing about the market analysis is it helps us get really, really narrow. You have a big idea, but you don't know where to start. Yeah. I hear so many founders say, I don't know what step one is, or I don't know what the next thing is that I need to do. We got to narrow your focus down. And that actually starts with market and competitive analysis.
I like it. I like it. So if someone was to say, I want to take on Salesforce as a platform, right? And I have this idea. Obviously, Salesforce is the number one competitor, but let's say they only want 1% of the marketplace. How do they identify their competitive analysis?
I think HubSpot is a great example of that, right? HubSpot is probably, they're not number one. Salesforce is definitely number one, but Salesforce has historically focused on, they started in B2B enterprise space. Correct. So business sales, high enterprise, Fortune 100, Fortune 500. We're building a platform that you can customize to your needs for big companies.
Right.
They did have solutions for small businesses, was not the focus as much for until like maybe the last 3 to 5 years. Yeah. Which guess what? It left an opening for HubSpot, who comes in and says, hey, maybe the way you're building Salesforce doesn't solve for the needs of small businesses. And we're actually going to come in and build a CRM, but we're actually going to make it really easy to plug and play, easy to use. You don't need someone to install it for you, right? You can just, I think it's a great example. And they've taken so much market share in that small business space. They have a business model around it. They like partner with, I think, entrepreneurship centers who are working in the community, right? Have this resale model. Great example, I think, of how knowing where we, you know, Salesforce focus gave them an opportunity to say, we're going to do something in that space, but a little different. But it applies to anything. It applied to us even as a food truck. When we were like, we want to come in and be a top 10 food truck, a gourmet food truck, we had to understand where there were gaps in the market. We didn't want to be a barbecue food truck in Charlotte, North Carolina, when there were 10 barbecue food trucks, right? You have to know what you're creating. And we created this really unique brand called Street Spice, where we did gourmet street food in the form of sliders. People loved it. We were a top 10 food truck within 6 to 9 months of launch. Nice. So we knew exactly where we were going to play. And we knew exactly what audience we were going after. We wanted not just to be at fairs and, you know, we wanted to go after lunch crowd and also high-end catering. And, you know, that came from our research of understanding who else was in the market and where we could really lean in to get market share quickly.
Okay. So we got one. Now let's go give you one more. Because you said we have four. So I got to make you choose. I can't, we got to make you, you know, separate the babies.
All right. So that actually went into my other favorite one. I'm gonna put those together, which is around creating your unique value proposition. It goes right hand in hand, right? Based on my knowledge about the competition, I'm now able to create a unique value proposition. I have a framework I work with my clients through, which actually goes step by step through how to build this unique value proposition. Yes. It articulates what you're doing, what pain are you solving for your customers, how you're different from the competition, and exactly what your value is and who your customer is. I'm going to connect that one to the market analysis.
I love that you're solving problems, right? I give you parameters. You're like, yeah, I like the parameters, but we're going to work around them. Go ahead. I like it.
That was one and a half.
Yes.
My second one will be, we talk a lot about testing your idea early and often, which is MVP, your minimal viable product. It breaks my heart, Chuck, when I meet entrepreneurs who have a great idea. Yeah. It's not yet a great business. And before they ever talk to their first customer, they have quit their job. They've drained all their savings, right? They just put everything into building whatever it is that they want to build.
Yeah.
And then they're like, now that I've built it, I'm going to go talk to my first customer.
Right.
Not a good idea to do that. You have to validate the market. And so we talk about how do you take this really big idea and get it down to its smallest size that provides value.
Right.
And let's focus on getting that to the market. And even before we build that, we're going to go test that and talk to customers and clients or prospective customers and clients to make sure people will pay for what we're building. And then we're going to build a small version of it. And we're going to test that. And all that feedback is going to help us then build something great. But so many people skip that step of soft launch, talk to your customers. So many people think I just got to build it first and then I'm going to get customers. And it's a bad way to go. So minimal viable product, we spend a lot of time there.
There's this test of change process that I think a lot of people don't run through, right? And I think because the bright side of entrepreneurship, the glitz and glam side is, oh, I'm building, I'm doing this thing. I'm making momentum and I'm making progress towards this dream that I have. And the boring side is market analysis. And let me slow down and do the small tests and let me make a SMART goal so that I know it's measurable, attainable, repeatable. Like those are the things I think that separate. I don't think everybody should be called an entrepreneur. I think somebody should be called small business owner. I think there should be like categories of something until you reach the word entrepreneur, because there are, you know, several small business owners that, you know, strive to keep the lights on, right? And that's $1,000 a month, $2,000, $5,000 a month. There are small business owners that now have payroll, right? And they are, you know, employing, you know, college, high school kids after work or after school or something like that. But talk to me a little bit about that test of change, right? When all you want to do, like for me, all I want to do is create, right? I want to create, throw it out there, see who loves it. You know, and after they love it, I'll refine it. So I'm kind of the horrible patient. right? Like you would say, is I build, and I've learned over the years. But talk to me about why we should slow down and test and refine.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think if you are really building something that you want to scale or sustain, like, be honest about what your goals are, first and foremost, but you have to have a strong foundation. And again, I don't care how many great tactics you have around smart goals and this, and I'm blocking my calendar. And if you don't have a good business strategy, it will not bring you to the success that you want. And I also meet so many small business owners too, and this applies to everybody, Chuck, those small business owners as well, where maybe they've built something that they didn't think big enough about. And so they're stuck in a place where they have to exchange their time for money, mm-hmm. right? I know so many people who have been there, relatives of my family. I've seen people who've had, for example, a cleaning business where they're the ones that are executing and delivering those services that works, but then they get to a certain age where it's like, I can't do that anymore. Right. And the way they've built their business model, maybe they've decided that they're going to be the cheapest person on the market versus add the most value. Well, guess what? Now they haven't built a big enough business or the right pricing model to be able to afford to hire someone so they can then get out of their business. Right. Those are the things that we help people think through. I'm not a fan of any small business owner exchanging time for money, because even we knew a small owner here who caught COVID and was out for a month. And guess what? His business stopped for a whole month.
Yeah.
Right. No income, no revenue. If you're serious about your business, we just can't take risks like that. And so regardless of where you are on that curve, I try to help people think, well, what would it look like to hire two people? It's like, oh, I'm not making enough money to do that. Well, how can we work on your business model and your plan, right? To do some projections of how many sales would you have to make to be able to hire a couple people, and how much would your services need to cost? And once we figure that out, now let's back into the appropriate go-to-market plan to help you actually achieve that. But we got to figure out what it looks like first.
I love it. Step three in the ready aim to launch.
It is the business model. What a perfect segue, Chuck. You just brought me right on in.
I love it.
It's the business model. So many people, I have a simple pro forma that I take business owners through. It is super, super easy to use. I have the sales highlighted, but we go through and we make some assumptions about our business and we do some projections. We look forward 18 months, 2 years, and we put in there, how many units do you need to sell? We put in there our expenses. We estimate our costs for labor, for our hires, things like that. We estimate paying ourselves what we want to make.
Yeah.
And we can play around with our sales volume per different item that you're selling and price point to come up with the plan financially that will get you the life you deserve. If you think it's $100,000 a month or a year you want to make, let's model it so we actually know how we're going to get there.
Yeah.
Again, from there, we do go to market. So then we have the financial plan. The strategy has to match, but so many people don't have the financial plan. And you tell me, I want to make $30,000 a month. I'm like, well, how many sales is that? You don't know. You don't know how much staff it is. How many people do you think? Oh, right. Chuck, I'm serious.
It's small. It's a small amount, because I think the other part is a lot of people don't understand that there's a different approach, right? And correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the $75 million venture capitalist earner here. But there's a different strategy when there's a tangible product versus when there is something that maybe there's a middleman, an e-commerce, or it's an intangible product like a program or coaching or things like that, right? So there's different approaches. And I don't think the average entrepreneur even gets to that point until after they've either made their first 10 grand or after they failed 10 times, right? Like, those are the two things that catapult you to either learning or quitting.
Yeah, that's very true. Sadly, that's very true. Again, that's why I feel like this work I'm doing is such purpose-driven work, because I can help people have a better shot their first time around than having to make all of these mistakes and stumble and get back. Or now you've built something that's extremely hard to pivot to where you actually want to go because you didn't do that work to begin with.
Yeah. I, you use that word pivot. It's such a beast. But one of the greatest stories that I've heard recently, and forgive me for the title of the company, OnlyFans, we know what it is now, right? But it apparently began as something completely different. The thought process in mind when they launched it was not for it to be what it has become, but sometimes your customers tell you what they want, right? Have you experienced any situations like that where you guys did the work, you did the market analysis, you did the business model, strategy was in place to project sales, and then the customers decided that the business was something else other than what it was?
Maybe not exactly that. Usually what I've seen with my customers as we go through the program and the process and work together is one, they'll have more clarity in their business. And so I was just working with two sisters that have their own business. They're building kind of a coaching enablement style platform. Okay. And they originally started in was like, well, our product could be for businesses or it could be for end customers. We could go B2B or B2C.
Yeah.
Like that's too much for you to build starting out. And they're like, well, we're going to go B2B. Okay. And so we start building the strategy and they get to that point where they're testing, they're talking to customers, right? And they come back or prospective customers and they come back and said, actually, we're going to go B2C for this reason, this reason. I love it, right? That's the kind of clarity you want in your business, but it usually happens in the process or a founder that is pursuing VC cap, like venture capital to be VC backed, thought that she needed to raise a certain amount of money. And we actually get through the financial impact and she actually did not have enough runway to get through the product dev. And it's like, actually, I was not raising enough money. That is one of the number one reasons why any business fails, right? Whether it's venture capital or not, is poor cash flow, number one. But number two, running out of money and not being able to access financial resources. Yeah. And so you'd be amazed at how many things happen as you just think this deeply through your business and have someone kind of asking the questions to help you think through, do you know?
Yeah.
All the steps.
That's huge. B2B is a tough world. I spent some time there doing sales in my earlier career. And while I love those commission checks, the amount of gatekeepers to get to a decision maker, and this is I'm probably aging myself. You can't see some of the infiltrators in the beard, but this is pre-social media where you can just identify, you can go on LinkedIn and say, oh, this is the person I need to speak to. We used to have to actually call, make friends with the receptionist, figure out who's who, you know, and B2B, I think it's changed now, but that's a tough nut to crack from starting from scratch.
It can be, you know, I could say it's different. It's trade-offs. B2B is great because you can get one business customer
that can set you up.
Who completely. Might buy 100, 1,000 units of your product, 2,000 units of your product. Versus having to have high volume on the consumer side, right? Yeah. I got to actually sell 1,000 people versus one sale that gets me 1,000 units.
Yeah.
So I actually prefer B2B a lot of even people that want to go B2C first, as your business starts to evolve, I usually challenge, is there a way for you to do something B2B that's connected or adjacent as you grow and can kind of scale? So B2B is a great way to layer on, but nothing wrong with B2C either. It's just a volume game. Yeah. So the way you go to market looks entirely different if you got to win your customers one at a time.
I love you. You know what, Brooke? You've earned it. You've earned it. Let's do number four. I can't fight it no more.
So I kind of already captured four. You know,
we did the one and a half. Like you wanted to play. You wanted to color outside the line. So now you got to give us another one.
Well, then we did the MVP. I am going to give you another one. Then we did the MVP, the minimal viable product. And then we talked about the business model. But the biggest missing piece that we actually talked about a lot because we talked about the mindset. The big piece that we have not discussed is go to market.
Okay.
I think that's where you're really getting at, which is around your sales strategy. It's around your marketing. It's around your branding. But no matter what, you can have, again, the most amazing product in the world. But if you cannot reach your client or your prospective customer, no one's going to buy your stuff.
Yeah.
And so really getting in the weeds on what that strategy looks like and having more than one channel. So sometimes someone say, I'm going to sell, I don't know, t-shirts.
Yes.
It's like, well, how are you going to sell your t-shirts? How are you going to reach your customer? Oh, I've got this influencer on social media who's going to promote it for me. Okay, great. But what else? Right. Unless the influencer is promoting every day, I'm sure they're not.
Yes.
And they can be expensive, but what else, right? How else are you going to reach your client? You should have multiple ways of thinking about getting to your client, whether it's social media, which is really strong these days. Reels is strong. TikTok is booming for a lot of different markets. But also, is it partnerships? Are there groups or communities that I can be a part of that have my customer in it? Is it speaking on podcasts? What exactly are you doing? Right. And a lot of times I meet people who have a go-to-market strategy that is single-threaded. It's just one thread. And a go-to-market should be multi-threaded. Even if you have to start in one place, you're usually not going to reach your goals for sales and growth with just one channel. And it's a combination of things. It's your brand, it's your sales, it's your marketing. How do those things come together to help you execute on that financial plan we discussed?
I love the way that you package everything and make it sound easy. I really do. Because, you know, we've been in this business long enough. We know that it's the steps are easy. We can lay it all out there. But this is the part of, this is the level of entrepreneurship where it gets harder than what we advertise on social media, right? And so I love that your approach makes it sound like, you know, a simple recipe. Right. You do this and it will come out taste just like grandma's cornbread. Like, you just relax, take some time, and we'll get it together. I want to back up a little bit because you spent some time in the DE&I space, diversity, equity, inclusion, initiatives for hiring and all that good stuff. And my question around that, you know, again, I spent some time as a recruiter. Are we doing a good enough job of exposing the next generation to of our kids to tech careers?
That's a good question.
Outside of content creators.
I know. There's tons of content creators. I'm really torn on that because I do think nowadays there are a lot of really fantastic programs for kids, especially underrepresented minorities, to be exposed to it.
Yes.
But still, there may still be gaps in connecting with people if their parents aren't already trying to take them there.
Yeah.
There are a ton of programs out there right now that do, from coding boot camps. We even did with Salesforce in Charlotte, we did a boot camp for a school where we had the students come into the office and we taught them how to build. We did a lemonade stand app. So we taught them how to build this app to take on the platform, and then we set up a little lemonade thing and they got to sell lemonade and it was a lot of fun. But there's a lot of programs out there like that.
Yep.
So I do think they exist. I don't know if we're really making the connection sometimes around, I think our community is missing, I guess, financial literacy conversations that I think connect to careers, because tech, there's nothing wrong with not wanting to be an entrepreneur, right?
Sure. Everyone
doesn't have that in them. But we can have good jobs. We can make great money to support our families. We can build wealth. Tech careers are a great way to do that. And so
sometimes
I feel like we overemphasize coding without actually talking about, you know, the breadth of careers in tech.
I've
been coding for fun, but my career has been sales and go to market. Totally different skill set, right? Totally different sets of opportunities. Attractive. But if you tie that into the financial literacy conversation around how money works, right? And if kids are actually understanding, like, what type of lifestyle do you want? How are you going to build it? So many kids go to college and just pick a career that they think they might be interested in. They don't really know what they want to do.
Right.
But we should be helping them understand all the different ways you can think about the viability of a career. I'm big on lifestyle too. So it's lifestyle as well. It's all these things. But I think we could do a better job of showcasing the opportunity of tech beyond coding.
So I agree. Now I want to get on the company's heads a little bit, because the DE&I has come across for the last few years as a checkbox, right? And we want to make sure this is a diverse hire. We want to make sure that this is, you know, that we have this initiative to give back in XYZ, but the decision makers remain the decision makers, and they don't take the diversity ideas, right? Or implement most of the ideas that they hire these people to do. Where's that gap? Where are we missing on that part?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think when you think about, you know, DEI strategies for any company, it should be a combination of two things. I do think we have to be intentional in certain markets on getting people in the door, because certain areas have been, like, as Black people, we've been so underrepresented for so long that if you are looking for people with, I don't know, 5 years of tech experience, you're looking at a very, very small pool. Absolutely. Because of legacy issues that have persisted.
Correct.
And so there has to be focus on bringing people in the door, which is breaking down those requirements. And instead of saying, I need 5 years of tech experience, what are the skill sets behind that that I need that are transferable? Can I find that from pharmaceutical sales? Can I find that from telecom sales? Can I find that from other places, right?
Yeah.
To help bring that into the fold. So we have to be intentional, I think, on hiring. I don't think this is work that naturally happens without focus and strategy and measuring, you know, figuring out where you're getting wrong, where you're getting right, and keep going. But the part two of that is in how do we set people up for success once they're in the door? And that's where I think what you're talking about, Chuck, with are people coming in at the right level? Do we have people at all levels in the organization? Do we have people in not just sales, but in our product and tech and all these different places? I think probably in the last few years, the focus has been on representation, which is how do we get people in the door? But now the focus is starting to shift to say more on experience. And there's a lot of work you could do on experience. You can do more surveys, more data, but you have to have both representation but experience. Otherwise, people are just going to attrit out the other side.
Yeah. And that attrition is one of the battles that I, you know, even now still fight, if not in recruitment, but I still fight because I think a lot of hiring managers look at resumes and they say, oh, not enough experience. I want somebody that's done it for 6 years. Well, that person that's done it for 6 years knows what they bring to the table. So if they don't like it, they're not going to stay very long versus you hiring somebody, to your point, Brooke, with 2 or 3 years, right? And they're still young and hungry and learning. They're going to stay a little bit longer. And now we don't have that turnover. We don't have that attrition for the company. So it's a win-win to hire someone in some instances with less experience because they tend to stay longer, right? And then you can create that track record of promoting from within. And, you know, you can have all the things that you want, but most hiring managers just want to keep the wheel spinning and don't have time to train. And so there's tons of, you know, rabbit holes that we could go down on that. As I was doing my research, right, because, you know, brought together by the great Pam Perry, as I was doing my research, one of your posts caught my attention. And it was discussing how to think like an entrepreneur. One of the items said, are you good at making decisions? Brooke, how would we know that? How do we, as an entrepreneur, because again, our best decisions have created the life that we are, you know, experiencing right now. So when I read that, and it was whiskey time, don't I'll be completely honest. But how does one know that going in? How would one know as an entrepreneur, I'm good at making decisions?
I would say some self-reflection.
Okay.
Of evaluating how we make decisions in our life currently. And do we feel stress about it, whether it's picking a restaurant or food, or when it comes to a challenge that's in front of you, are you able to evaluate the situation, the options? Do you find yourself in a state of despair and hopelessness and frustration? Or are you action-oriented where you're like, this is the situation, whether it was a mistake or not, doesn't matter. This is the current state. I can't change the past.
Right.
But I've got to evaluate my options to go forward on the future. And at some point I'm going to make a decision to take an action and we're going to go forward.
I like that. I like that because a lot of people, you know, there's a fight or flight, right? Sometimes you get hit with the decision and even though the action may only take you 10 minutes to do, the thought process of the decision just takes you out of the game. And I always tell this story of one time I had these shelves to build in the garage and the box came and it was so big that I just looked at it, was like, it's going to be like IKEA on steroids. I am not doing that. Took me 4 months to open that box. And by the time I opened the box, 15 minutes to put it together, I was just so, and I think we approach things like that often, is where we look at what it might take because of the way we approach it, the packaging that it comes in, the thought process that it comes in. And then once we start doing the work, we're like, oh, everything's kind of already here. So I like the way that you position that one. When I saw the question, I was like, I don't know. Talking in my high voice again. But again, stages of entrepreneurship, right? Like, do I have proof that I've made good decisions? Am I experiencing a life outside of this venture that I want to launch where I have evidence of making good decisions? So that's huge. I've noticed men lie. I've noticed that women lie, but the numbers don't, right? And so you have helped over 57 figure earners. What keeps you going? What, you know, when you look in the mirror at night and you say, Brooke, I am that girl. What makes you get up and do it all over again?
Again, I'm big on purpose and spirituality. And I believe that all of us in life have been put here to add value, to help, to serve, right? And so everybody has a purpose. Everyone has unique gifts. And that's why I think entrepreneurship is so possible for anybody. But we all have something unique that we are here to give to the world. And this is it for me. I want to create millionaires. That's my next one. I want to be able to create X amount of millionaires just by with the people I work with. I want to help and enable them take their dreams and kind of get to that next level.
Yeah.
And so it's been life-changing for us. Entrepreneurship for me and my husband has been just this amazing journey and experience. Even our ability to then create businesses that are big enough to then give jobs to other people and really good jobs and opportunities. It just feels good. So I'm actually going to take from something that Oprah said that inspired me.
Okay.
I went to go hear her speak. It's actually what started me on my meditation journey. But she said, everybody here is capable of kind of pursuing your vision. And if I can just be that small spark, right, to make a flame for you to go be this bright light and pursue your energy, that's what I want to do. And that's how I feel about if I can be this spark, right, to help you get your idea into a strong business strategy, to give you resources and just set you up for your best chance of success, then wow, right?
Yeah. That's huge. Getting close to wrapping up. What have you learned from the years of marriage that you can use in business? And what have you learned from business that you can use in marriage?
That's tough to separate because my husband has been my business partner for so long, over a decade.
Okay.
Business partners. I'll say I can kind of speak at it from that lens of being a business partner with your spouse or your partner. Maybe one is that we have to make time to turn things on and off.
Yes.
So our partnership just can't always be about work, which sometimes is easy to do. In the food truck, you're running a food truck. It was very easy just because of the dynamics of running a food truck and a team for that to be the focus of our conversation. And over time, that's one thing that we've really adjusted is how much, what percentage of time does the work take up versus personal and just connecting individually. I would say communication is probably a good business to marriage principle. It's like easy sometimes in marriage to not communicate when things are difficult, right? You can just shut up and hold it in, or I'm just not going to listen, right? And you kind of go your ways. You can't do that in business, right? Like when things are going bad or whatever the case may be, it's not like not talking about it makes it go away. You have to deal with it.
Right.
And so bringing that same kind of communication lens from business, I think, to relationships would go a long way.
I have this image in my head now, you know, you guys being mad at each other for whatever reason and then going to work and be like, hey, how's it going? Working in a food truck. That is hilarious. I love it. After having this conversation or after just reflecting in general on, you know, you're purpose driven and you've accomplished so much in your career thus far, when you hear the word vision, what does that mean to you?
Vision to me, I guess, is really around maybe intention, being intentional on where you're trying to go.
Okay.
And it can be as big as you want it to be. That's the thing sometimes people forget is when you start in kind of these small foundations, but your vision can be as big as you want it to be. but really knowing what you're going and being honest about the life that you really want to live. I think sometimes people have a vision and it's only focused on the size of the business, right? Or a certain amount of money. But like, what are the other things around that that should be in your vision? What do you want your relationships to look like, right? Your family, like, what do you want your time to look like? What about health and all the other things that you enjoy doing and create? Like, what does that whole life look like? And so for me, I think the vision can include your business, but it should definitely include your lifestyle, and having that honesty around what that vision looks like trickles back to drive your intention and attention to help you achieve that goal.
Love it. Love it. When you hear the word purpose, what does that mean for you?
Purpose, again, I'm taking it from a meditation and spiritual lens, which says that we're all called here. I'll take a step back. Think about all the things that had to happen in this world and universe for us to be here right now, Chuck. For you to be born, for just all these things, the place that you were, all these things came together, right?
Yeah.
Magically for us to be here. That is purpose, right? We are meant to be here at this time. We all are unique. We have something that we're called to do that will bring us in alignment to achieve both our goals, but also feel the most satisfied. And so for me, purpose is really just finding that silence, stopping all the external things around me so I can really go inward and listen to, like, what is it at my deepest desire that I feel like I'm being, that I want, number one, but number two, how am I being called to serve? Mm-hmm. And when you can bring those things together, I think that's purpose.
Confidence. What about that word?
I don't know. Confidence is hard for me. I feel like I'm blessed to have parents that always raised me to believe that I could do whatever I put my mind to. So at an early age, I always felt like no matter what it was that I wanted to do, it was possible.
Yes.
And I think confidence is just that. It's believing in yourself. It is in today's society, taking almost a step back to just be grounded in who you are. Versus the world is telling you have to be, right? Or that your business has to be. That is kind of where confidence comes from. But I think it's just this inner calmness of, one, everything's going to be okay. Even if it's a bad day, everything is going to be okay.
Yes.
Believing the universe is working in your favor and to your benefit. And then from there, trusting that you are taking the best action you can to be that best version of yourself. That's confidence. I love it.
My father once told me, if you learn how to sell, you'll never go broke. Talk to me really quickly as we wrap up about learning how to sell and how that's helped your career path.
So I have a very traditional sales background.
Okay.
Even in high school, I used to work at Sears in the lawn and garden section selling tractors.
Okay.
I was a server, you know, I've been selling my whole life. And then I went to an actual sales career as well. Okay. I think the first step of learning how to sell is to change the mindset. People feel like selling is pushing their product on someone, when actually selling is meeting a customer that has a need for what you offer and you are solving a problem. When I feel like I'm solving a problem for my customer, I have no problem picking up a phone, sending an email, talking to someone at a conference, because I know I can make whatever they're experiencing better. I'm adding value, right? I'm not pushing on them that they don't need. And that's where understanding your customer comes into play. If you're pushing something to someone that doesn't need it, it doesn't feel good because they're like, I don't even mow my lawn. Like, I live in an apartment building. I don't need a tractor. Why are you trying to sell me? Right? But when you're in a match with your customer, now you're in a place where you're adding value. So I think step one is people have got to get out of the mindset that sales is quote unquote used car men, pushy, right? Yeah. These bad business tactics. When I sell, I'm solving a problem for my clients. It's very personal and I know I'm adding value, and that feels a lot different.
5,000 women in a room, 20 to 35. Brooke Daniels is on stage. What do you want them to know?
I want them to know, one, you have to believe in yourself and your dreams are possible. Whatever it is that you dream of achieving in a life is completely possible. You just have to find a place to start and you have to bet on yourself. That's it. Sometimes you have to make space to listen, right? You have to take a step back from the everyday world to listen, but it's totally possible. Believe in yourself and have that courage to take step one, and you won't regret it.
I love it. Where can everybody find you online, Brooke?
Yes. So it's pretty consistent. The Brooke Daniels on Instagram. It's Brooke with an E. Also on Facebook, The Brooke Daniels. And my website is thebrookdaniels.com. So it's very consistent. It's got some testimonials on there from my clients. I've got a freebie on there if you want to check it out. It's a guide on, is my business idea a winner? So free guide if you go on my website to just, if you want to test your idea and think about how to decide if it's something you want to pursue or not, definitely go check that out. And then it also, of course, lines out some of the products and group mentorship courses, things like that I offer.
I love it. I love it. Visionaries, make sure you jump over to thebrookdaniels.com. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been rocking with the great one, Miss Brooke Daniels, and yours truly, Chuck Hawkins, here at the Hawk Vision Podcast. We've been talking about business strategies, personal growth, my lack of meditation skills, and so much more. I hope this interview was informative. I hope we've added a smile to your day. And more importantly, we hope that we've helped you shorten the learning curve on your journey to success. As you can see, your boy is out of coffee. Make sure that we look at that link in the show notes, because we can't have that. You don't want me uncaffeinated. Like, share, and subscribe across all your platforms. Send in your messages, guest suggestions. Can't continue to grow this show without you guys. We are now at 70 countries. That is absolutely huge. Visionaries, I'm so appreciative of you. And Ms. Brooke Daniels, thank you so much for joining the show.
This has been great. Thanks for having me, Chuck.
You got it. You guys know how it goes. There is absolutely no miracle that will happen without someone doing something. We'll either see you at the top or from the top. Thanks for having us this time.